Hey everyone. Today we are doing a feed swap with our friend Jeff Stormer over at Party of One. That means that we're sharing an episode of Party of One on our feed, and Jeff is sharing an episode of My First Dungeon over on his. Party of One is an award-winning actual play podcast that focuses on two-player role-playing games. Over the past 8 years, Jeff has made nearly 400 episodes and has played over 300 different TTRPGs. If there is a game you can think of, seriously, think of a game, chances are Jeff has played it one-on-one with a great guest. So if you're caught up on My First Dungeon and are looking for your next favorite actual play show, go check out Party of One.
Party people, welcome once again to the Party of One podcast, the actual play RPG podcast where the gaming table is always set for two. I'm your host as always, Jeff Stormer, and this week on the show, I am joined by Caro Assertion for a game of, I'm sorry, did you say street magic is a city building game for two or more players. Players take turns exploring a city block by block, location by location, neighborhood by neighborhood, along the way discovering the people and places that make it just so dang interesting and that call that city home. It is a beautiful and breathtaking world-building game. It is legitimately, I do not say this lightly, legitimately one of my favorite games. It is an active and direct inspiration to me. More about that in the coming months. And I love it so much, and I can't wait for you to hear it and discover this game. Go buy the game and support it. I love it. You can pick up a copy of the game at cexcursion.itch.io/streetmagic. You will not regret it. Let's just put it like that. You can find more information about I'm Sorry, Did You Say Street Magic, as well as the rest of Caro's work in the show notes. Real quick, before we dive in, a special thank you to Steph Beck-Fay, our newest backer on Patreon. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for supporting the games that I create and the podcasts and all this kind of cool stuff. Patreon backers get early access to episodes, raw audio of Party of One episodes, the texts of games before they are released, as well as just, like, extra cool stuff that I make. You can find more information at patreon.com/JeffStormer. And with all that said, let's throw it over to me in the past so that he can get started with the show. Take it past me. Thanks, future me. This week, I am super, super excited. This has been one that I've been looking forward to for a good long while now. I am joined by Caro Assertion. Caro, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. I'm really excited to be here.
I am so, so jazzed. I know we've been planning this episode for like a while, and it's been just a matter of like finding the time for us to both sit down. And I'm so, so jazzed about it because I don't know if you know this, but I really love the game that we're going to be playing this week.
I think I've seen you mention that. I'm really glad to hear that. Thank you so much.
Of course. Real quick, at the top of the show, why don't you let our lovely listeners know the game that we are playing this week, as well as anything else you've got going on that you might want them to know about?
For sure. As Jeff has said, my name is Caro Assertion. The game that we're playing today is one that I designed by the name of I'm Sorry, Did You Say Street Magic? It is roughly based off of Microscope by Ben Robbins, along with inspiration from, you know, various other sources. As far as plugs go, you can find me on Twitter at CExcursion, spelled S-E-A Excursion. You can support my itch.io and Patreon, both also at CExcursion. I think that's pretty much everything I've got.
Hell yeah. I've said it before and I'll say it again. This game absolutely positively rules, and we played it on AMFC a while ago, and literally, like, Aaron was like, hey, I've got this game for us to play, and halfway through the episode, I was sitting with my head in my hands like, this is very good. So I'm pretty jazzed.
Hell yeah.
So, let us introduce, I'm sorry, did you say Street Magic? Great name. First off,
no worries,
great
I did.
Name. Okay, I'm Sorry, Did You Say Street Magic is a game about building a city, filling it with life and vivid detail, exploring its hidden corners, and meeting its strange and wondrous inhabitants. It is designed to be played as a single-session game. It can be played as an ongoing, continuous game, but we will be playing it as in a single session. This is a game about making a city. It is a city-building story game. We are going to take turns exploring our city. By the end of the game, we will have created a place that none of us could have imagined alone. Our agenda as players is to create a vibrant and multifaceted city, to fill that city with life and personality, and to expand on each other's ideas together. Unlike many tabletop games, I'm sorry, did you say Street Magic is played without a game master or facilitator? The game goes back and forth between phases of independent and collaborative action. At times, we will decide on certain aspects of the city as a group, but on our turn, each of us has complete control over what we add to the city. Would you like to read the section on safety tools?
I would be more than happy to read the section on safety tools. I'm sorry, did you say Street Magic is designed for light and breezy gameplay? But, you know, much like exploring a city in real life, a game of Street Magic might end up wandering down strange paths or in unexpected directions. So, you know, we've got a couple of safety tools just to make sure that we're looking out for each other at the table.
Mm-hmm.
There are rest stops, which is, you know, after a while, we can always step away from the table for a few minutes, use the break to stretch, catch our breath, get some water or snack if we need. Usually those tend to happen after each round of full play ends, before the next one begins. Along with that, we have holds, which are a tool we can use to address a concern in the moment. You know, rest stops can give us mm-hmm. a chance to catch our breath, but they can't always address things that come up in the middle of play. So at any point, if either of us is like, hey, I'm not sure exactly where this is going, we can just call for a hold and talk through things as we go. And lastly, we have lines and veils, which are, you know, just a chance to mitigate the chance that we might have to call for a hold and help us steer the direction that we're interested in telling the story. Lines are subjects that we don't want to appear in the game at all, and veils are things that we can, you know, might come up, but that we agree not to discuss in extensive detail. And we have talked about both our lines and veils off-screen, kind of before the show, and they're written down in the document.
Yes, we have them in front of us. And so with all of that, we will go ahead and start to build out our city. The first part of creating a city is establishing tone, the color and texture of the setting that we're going to explore. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to decide on a few adjectives to fill out the mood of our city. We should each pick at least one from the list below, but we don't have to limit ourselves to these options.
One of the things that I like to do with two-player games when it's, you know, just two people playing is you pick an adjective and then I pick an adjective. And then each of us picks a second adjective and we find what's kind of the average between those.
I love that. That's really cool.
Anything on this list or anything in general really jumping out to you?
You know, I've been there's a few that really do jump out to me. And the one that I really want to throw out more than any of the others is I want to throw out Crisp. I think it's partially because we are recording this in autumn and partially because I've been watching this really fun show about a sleepy Pacific Northwestern town that is haunted by a supernatural murder. Just the idea of like a crisp sort of autumnal energy like feels very appealing to me about the town that we're exploring.
I love that. I love that. I'm more than happy to go with Crisp. I think I will maybe complicate that by suggesting bright.
Hmm.
I think, you know, there's definitely different kinds of autumnal energy. You know, you can have an autumn that's a little bit more muted, an autumn that's, you know, mm-hmm. very gray, very, very cool earth tones. But I'm also interested in, you know, very, very bright and very vivid colors. And I think that's something
yeah.
I'm really interested in.
Yeah, and that is, you know, side note, that is a big, like, that is to me is a big autumnal thing because I've always lived in areas with very, like, present seasons, and so that is a very good call-out because that is, like, when I picture cities in that kind of autumnal energy, that is really specifically what I'm seeing as well, so that's perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I guess for this third adjective, we should pick some things that we think are going to sort of pull us in, you know, in an even third and in different direction as well.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
I want to this very kind of bright, crisp energy. The other note that I really want to throw in there is I'm torn between two, so I'm gonna go with, I've looked at them side by side, and it might make me a parody of myself to go with the option that I'm going with, but I'm gonna go with gritty. I think I you know what, I gotta partially because, you know, I have much love for my beautiful orange son, but I was either going to go with eerie or gritty, and I feel like gritty I enjoy more in picturing this like bright autumnal city complicated by that other element, and that, and a grittiness feels more interesting and like novel to me than an eeriness does.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I was going to suggest slick. And I, you know, what's the average between gritty and slick? It feels like those are, you know, diametrically opposed almost. But I really like this idea of both gritty and bright. I like those two adjectives in conversation with crisp. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm more than happy to go with those. So our city is crisp, bright, and gritty.
I'm already excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So these are the words we're going to use to start a brief conversation about our city. We're going to come up with a big picture idea. Is it modern? Is it in the past? Is it a strange future? Are there ghosts, robots, talking animals? What visual and setting elements immediately come to mind to you that really excite you when you picture a city that is kind of crisp, bright, and gritty?
Yeah, I'm interested in a city that has greenery, and I mean, you know, especially if we're thinking it's particularly autumnal, that greenery might not be green; it might be, you know, with the turn of the seasons changing in color. But I'm definitely interested in genre tone, at least in something that has a bit of, it doesn't necessarily have to be fully pastoral. I think we can still have an urban splash to it, but something that, you know, isn't so urban and so dense that it doesn't have space for greenery in that way.
I agree completely, and the other direction that I want to run with that is the visual aesthetic that like really jumps out at me when I think about this city is this visual of like there being an industrial element to it, but being like alongside that greenery, like that kind of high contrast is very interesting to me. That sort of like, you know, big industrial, almost brutalist like buildings surrounding or like interspersed or, you know, in unison with that really lush autumnal greenery, like feels like the aesthetic that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I like that. There's something really, really exciting about the intersection of that space. I mean, we are recording this in October, and it'll be a while before it comes out. But do we want to lean into, you know, do ghosts exist? Is this like a little bit of a spooky quality?
I'm going back and forth on that exact question, and I think I'm going to throw it to you. How do you feel? Which more excites you? Is it something that is sort of more supernatural or more mundane? Like what, which possibility excites you? Which road do you want to travel down?
I'm going to do...
Because they both sound good to me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to propose that we find the supernatural in the mundane, and the mundane in the supernatural.
Cool.
You know, if ghosts exist, there is a normality or a, you know, a mundanity to their presence. You know, there might be literal street magic.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lean super heavily into an urban fantasy that paints, you know, fantastic.
I agree. And I think that's part of, to me, that grittiness, that grit, is this feeling of anything is kind of tampered with that sense of the mundane, right? Like, it's, it very much is, ordinary, or like, procedural in a very kind of specific way.
I like that. I really like that.
And I like the margins that opens up for, with like the supernatural or the fantastic within that. But I agree very much with what you were saying. Like, it's sort of hidden within that mundane nature.
Well, I feel like, is there anything else that we want to touch base on here before we jump into laying the foundations?
I don't think so. I think the only question that I'll have for you, and this might be something that we kind of investigate and play a little bit, is this closer to a modern city that has fantastical elements, like a modern set city with fantastical elements, or is this closer to a, like, fantasy city that feels modern? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I like that. That's a good distinction. We can certainly complicate and explore this in play, but I think I'm leaning toward the former a little bit.
I was kind of feeling the same, and I wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
You know, maybe phones exist. Maybe phone booths exist. We'll figure that out and play.
Excellent. Well, then I think we are ready to lay some foundations down.
Yeah. So if either of us, So we start by asking, you know, who most recently rode public transit, and that person goes first. But I'm not sure if that is necessarily apt in our current day and age. Do you have anything that's jumping out to you, or do you want me to lead on this one?
Why don't you take the lead on this one?
Sure, I would be more than happy to. So I'm going to, before we really start exploring the city, we're going to add just a couple of, you know, cards to the table to spark our imagination before we really zero in and kind of explore it on a theme by theme basis. So to start, I am going to go to the section on exploring a neighborhood. Neighborhoods are kind of the broadest type of cards that we can play to build our city. If we were playing in person, we would be writing all of our aspects of the city on different index cards. We're just using a Google Doc for today. But to explore a neighborhood, we're going to take a blank index card and give it the following three key elements, which are a title, a reputation, and a true name. So the title of a neighborhood is what the denizens of the city call it on, you know, a daily basis. It could be named after local geography, the history of its residents, the types of business that are conducted there. The reputation is just sort of the general vibe of a neighborhood. You know, is it really residential? Is it really commercial? Is it really industrial? What do its residents think of themselves? What do other neighborhoods think of this one? All of this is a conversation. Like, if you have questions as we're kind of talking it through, you're more than welcome to ask them. What we say out loud is always more important than what we write down. And then every neighborhood has a true name, which is kind of a magic all of its own. And that's just sort of descriptive sensory images that paint a really clear idea of the neighborhood in our minds. And those can be tactile details, but they can also just as easily be poetic or metaphorical or symbolic. The true name elicits the idea or the personality.
Sure.
A neighborhood's reputation might be what people think of it, but its true name is what makes it truly unforgettable. So to start, I'm going to introduce a neighborhood called the Rust District. I think this neighborhood is predominantly built up around, I think there were a lot of factories. This is, is a industrial space. But I think that it used to be a lot of factories, and these days a lot of them have either downsized or moved or closed. There are still spaces that are active, but alongside those factories, there are residents and homes and, you know, storefronts and other spaces that have, other communities that have moved into sort of the wreckage, not the wreckage, have moved into the structures that used to be industrial in that way.
I think here's the question that I want to ask you as I kind of picture the aesthetics of the Rust District. These buildings, these communities, these shops, these homes that have kind of moved into the into sort of the spaces of the Rust District where these kind of factories used to be. Are they sort of literally like moving into the factories? Like, is it like what was like you on the outside looks like a factory, and then you kind of walk in, you see, you know, like doors and offices that have been converted into apartments? Or like, have they kind of been, have some of those factories either been torn down or sectioned off and like rebuilt as homes and shops and things?
I think it's a little bit of a mix. I think there are, you know, there are definitely communities that have moved into the architecture that's already there, moved into those spaces. And I think it's certainly easier to move in and not necessarily renovate, not necessarily tear these buildings down, but to transform them. I think there are definitely a handful of spaces in this neighborhood that have kind of seen that transformation. But I think it's a mixture. But I think a lot of folks are more inclined to build off of what is already there rather than to demolish and to recreate.
Cool. I love that. I love that a lot.
And for its true name, for the images that are really, really jumping out to me, what I have are pumpkin patches and ivy in the brickwork. And the other true name that I'm giving it is steam, not smoke.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Those are very good, and they give me a really clear picture of like, that gives me a clear picture of what the true name is as well as what the Rust District is. So that's really, those are excellent, and I'm very excited.
That's how true names go. It tells you exactly, you know, you go to a place, its true name tells you these are the things that somebody's eye, somebody's ear might be drawn to.
Awesome. I love that. That's fantastic.
All right. So now it's your turn, and you can either add another neighborhood if you're so inclined, or add a landmark to the Rust District.
I'm going to add another neighborhood. I think the neighborhood that I'm going to add, let's see if I can think of the name.
You can always go out of order as well if you have a reputation or a true name first.
I'm going to go with the Hallowed Halls as the name of the neighborhood. This is specifically, I'm not sure if it's near the Rust District. It might be in an entirely different part of town, or I also kind of like it being very close and like that kind of very factory aesthetic bleeding between the two. But this is like, City Hall and the adjacent buildings are like a cluster of buildings. Or actually, Yeah, they're like a cluster of buildings where they're that kind of cluster of like official looking buildings where they feel like they could be one building. And you know, the reputation here is one of the history here is one of endless history and endless bureaucracy, right? Like, it's these ancient buildings, these buildings that have been here for generations and generations and generations, and you can go back and look at the oldest photos and drawings of the city, and these buildings look as, like, they look like they haven't been touched or expanded upon, and given how sort of incredibly entangled they are and incredibly kind of labyrinthine they are, like, it seems wild that no one has ever like worked on them. And it has that feel when you look at a particular like cluster of buildings where it looks like they have that feel of that they could be moving, or they could just be, you know, that big and old and intertwined.
Mm-hmm. I've got a question here. When you say that they're clustered, is there space between them? Are they, you know, literally a lot of buildings? Or it's like, okay, City Hall is connected to these other buildings and you kind of come in and out, but they're all built out of the same foundation? Or is there space between them, would you say?
I kind of envision them as... I think they might be one building that looks and is probably like legally registered as seven, in that like there are walkways and tunnels and, you know, like parking garages and sort of underground walkways. And there are spots where they are connected and like they've kind of always been connected, but they are like discrete buildings, and like you can look at one and be like, this is City Hall, but you can see the like 16 points, like especially if you're looking at a cross section that goes above and below ground, like you can see like the 16 points where it connects to every other building in the Hallowed Halls.
Yeah, it's the kind of place where, you know, you could enter in one building and spend your day doing your errands and at the end of the day leave out of any of the other ones.
Yeah, and end up like 6-8 blocks away.
Mhm. I love that.
And so the true name that I've written is Echoes Ping-Ponging Between Stone Walls and Streets Streets Empty Where They Shouldn't Be. It's this picture of you speak around the Hallowed Halls, and because the buildings are so kind of intertwined and connected in these very strange ways, it like there are echoes in the air, right? Like you hear the echoes, right? And they kind of like they might echo in ways that completely don't make sense because they're bouncing off of walls that are in spots that are in no other spots in the city. Mm-hmm. And because of all these hallways, like you can walk the street among the Hallowed Halls and there might just be no one. And it's that kind of eeriness of like, there's so much stuff happening here and they're so important. So to be alone in that space or to look around and not see anyone is like a profoundly like unnerving experience.
I love that. Well, we've got two neighborhoods down. Just to lay a couple more cards on the table, we can, maybe let's go around one more time, and either we can add, you know, another neighborhood or another landmark.
Cool.
I'm gonna introduce a landmark, and I think I'm gonna introduce a landmark in the Hallowed Halls.
Cool.
Landmarks are, you know, the second highest tier of card that we can play to build our city. They have to be played within a pre-existing neighborhood, and a neighborhood can contain, you know, any number of landmarks. So this one that I'm playing down isn't the only thing that exists in the Hallowed Halls.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a neighborhood, each landmark should have a common name, like a title, that people call it in their day-to-day lives. The name of this landmark is The name of this landmark is the Providence Clock Tower Garden. Every landmark also needs an address. If it feels appropriate, you know, this could be a literal address. Like, what we decide to name our streets is, you know, going to tell us something about the city and about the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it could also be more poetic. You know, is it the heart of the neighborhood? Is it off the beaten path? Is it several stories up? Is it below street level? And I think the address for the Province Clock Tower Garden is, it's a two-part address. And the first part is, you know, in the shadow of Province Clock Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part is two stories up. I think this is a garden that is built onto the roof of another building within Hallowed Halls. I think it's one of those things where you can't see it necessarily from ground level. You know, you look at these photos that you're saying about the Hallowed Halls, and it's kind of eternal sameness.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that quality to it. Like, you look at Province, you look at the clock tower, it hasn't changed. But if you see the city from a different angle, if you look at it from a different perspective, this garden that has grown up in kind of its shadow is complicating that. I think this is a space that is a little bit more recent, a little bit more modern. And it's a little bit out of sight, just in that it hasn't quite popped up, doesn't show up in that way, especially when you compare it to the bureaucracy of the halls at large. But it's a little bit bustling. It's a little bit thriving.
A question for you. Is it open to the public?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
That's very important. It's a little bit closer to a park than a garden, but it's a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And for its true name, I'm gonna say, similar to a neighborhood, each landmark has its own true name. But you know, for a landmark, the true name is an opportunity to ask, how is it in line with the style of the neighborhood, and how does it push against it? What is the same, what is different, and what continues to make it truly unique? So for the true name for this garden, I'm going to say novelty amidst history, and plenty of benches.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a ton.
Actually, I'm going to add one more true name.
All right.
Which is, I think the garden definitely changes with the seasons. So I think that the flowers, it's flowers on rotation.
Love it.
You know, some people say, oh, the autumn is the best time to go and visit the garden, and everybody has their own opinion on, you know, is it spring, is it summer? Absolutely.
So I'm also going to make a landmark, and I'm going to make it in the Rust District. I've thought a lot, something that, like, I think every good, like, industrial district needs. This is the Steam Whistle Cafe.
Mmm.
Or no, the Steam Whistle Diner. It's got to be a diner. I grew up in New Jersey. I have to have a diner. And I think that its address here is around the corner.
Of course.
I think it is a place that you can among that kind of fantastical among the mundane is it's kind of always around the corner. Whether that is because the Rust District is sort of like small and grid like, or it's something a little more like whimsical. Like, it's the idea that, like, if you need to hit the Steam Whistle Diner, and I think it is very much of a classic greasy spoon diner that, like, as the neighborhood transitioned out of being this very like industrial place where it was serving you know, factory workers who were leaving, like, and who were working the night shift or the second and third shift and were grabbing a quick meal before or after work. Mm-hmm. Like, it has transitioned into just being a place that everybody kind of goes to grab a bite. And I think the true name is Eggs Your Way Bagels 50 Cents Extra, because you can pretty much ask for any kind of breakfast sandwich. Because, like I said, they've kind of transitioned into being a very kind of grab-and-go, greasy spoon place. And so kind of everybody knows that, like, if you want a sandwich, you can pretty much get eggs anywhere you want, and a bagel is going to be 50 cents extra. Otherwise, you get either toast or a croissant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is simply the place that, like, for people in the city, I think particularly, it's a place where you can always go and just grab a quick bite. And, like, there's never that much of a crowd. You can always get your food pretty quick. They throw it in a brown paper bag and they send you on your way. And they have that kind of magical, to me, of loving meanness that comes from a really great diner. It's the only way that I can describe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a brusqueness which yes. is, you know, still carries love in its heart.
Yeah. And so that is a prominent feature in the Rust District, is like, and I think it is the spot that it's the local spot, right? I think it's the spot where you go if you know the neighborhood, right? Like, which is kind of why its address is around the corner. Like, it's the spot where if somebody from out of town is like, where can I grab a bite? It's, oh, the Steam Whistle Diner's around the corner. Like, it is the spot that is, like, kind of ingrained in your memory.
Yeah. It's a staple in that way.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. Well, we've laid a couple of cards down. We have, you know, we've got a diner, we've got some bureaucracy, we've got a lot of the things that a city needs, but we're missing one of the big things that a city usually needs, which is a name.
Are missing a name.
Do we feel like we have a read on this city enough to name it right now? If we don't have a name, we can let it kind of arise organically during play, but if anything is jumping out,
I'm getting a vibe, but I don't know that I have a name fully yet.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my vibe check. The vibe that I'm getting, like, among the in addition to like the adjectives that we've laid down, is that like it is a city that has a generational quality to it, and it is a city that has not just history, but like a generational, a transitional, a legacy is not quite the right word, but I'm not quite sure what is. Like, it is a city that is defined as much by the passage, like, it feels, so far it feels defined by the passage of time.
I like that. That's really interesting. If I can pitch you on something.
Yeah.
Is this city perpetually autumn? Is this a city that, you know, we would see a regular or change of the seasons if we're, you know, seeing seasons in that way.
Maybe it's different shades of autumn, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we had talked about when we were sort of describing the adjective of bright, of like, there are different types of autumnal, and maybe it is forever autumnal, and the closest it gets to seasons are like going through those different shades, right? It goes from kind of cool and crisp and colorful with the golden leaves to that kind of brownish late autumn, early winter kind of grime, and like it cycles among those, but it's never green and sunny, to put it to kind of, it never feels summery.
Yeah, or if it does, it's, you know, two weeks out of the whole year.
Yeah, it's like a Tuesday where it's 80 and sunny and everybody's like, what is this? This is, I was not expecting this at all. And it's like the talk of the town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that there's this, there's still a feeling of transience and of moving through time, but it's not so, so varied and so vast as to kind of fully encompass the turn of the seasons in a full way.
And the other thing that kind of, first off, transience is a great word. I think that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting from it. Like, and the other thing that kind of, it feels to me like a lot of this, and I think the autumnal energy really carries this is a city that isn't, and maybe this is saying like a very similar thing, but I think it's a similar but important distinct thing, is this is a city that is, has roots in the past. Like it's not, or rather, part of its identity is that it is not what it was, for lack of a better way to put it. You know what I mean? Like there's this energy of like, it was something, and now it is something else. There's a changing element to this city that feels important to me that I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm. Can I pitch you on a name? Because I think there was something you said that sparked an idea.
Please.
Is this the city of Uproot?
Uproot's really good. Fuck. Uproot's very good.
Yeah, you were just talking about how it is simultaneously rooted, but also changing, and it I don't know, it just feels like it clicks.
It does. It feels right.
Okay. So now we can jump in a little bit more. The basic overview of Around, now that we've sort of laid this foundation, is that we're going to start with one player declaring a compass, which is like a theme or a subject of exploration for this round. And then we're going to wander the city for a little bit, spending some time exploring, you know, neighborhoods or landmarks or adding residents to the table. And all of the cards that we add during the round are connected to the compass. And then we're going to close out the round by holding an event, which is just a chance to take on, you know, perspectives of the city and see the way that it changes around us.
Cool. I love that. I have a compass, if you don't mind.
For sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have a compass, something that, like, in talking, as we were kind of describing sort of the mood and the feelings we were getting, there is something that really, like, struck me that I want to kind of immediately explore a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Compass, and a compass is just a thing to kind of keep us moving in the same direction, like keep us ground, like keep each round sort of focused on something.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I really want to like focus on is, for lack of a better way to put it, like the here and now. And that feels perhaps like, on one level, that feels perhaps like obvious to say, like we are exploring the city as it is now. But what I mean by that is more so like, We've talked how this is a city that is generational and is historic and is a city with lineage and is a city that has roots. I kind of want to know, I think we've kind of established a lot of that, so I'm really curious what it looks like to people living there today, right? To very kind of like ordinary people living today in the here and now, like what it looks like. More like what it looks like to live in the shadow of all of that sort of history.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, I think, you know, the here and now is a great compass.
It's the talk of the table.
Hey everyone, it's Brian. Just wanted to let you know that if you're enjoying this episode of Party of One, you might also like to hear my conversation with Jeff Stormer over on our other podcast, Talk of the Table. In it, we discuss how to find your next TTRPG, what we've learned about design from good and bad games, And Jeff even makes some recommendations for me that I am almost certain will appear on this podcast in the future. So go check out our episode of Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, back to the show.
So, Jeff, my friend, you have the floor. Do you want to, starting with you, we can go around and either add another neighborhood, landmark, or resident to the table.
I'm gonna add a resident. Residents are the inhabitants of the city who fill it with vivid and colorful life. Resident is always associated with a landmark. Mm-hmm. I am going to add a resident to... I'm trying to decide if I'd like them to be more tied. I think I'm going to add them to the Steam Whistle Diner, I think, is where I'm going to add a resident. Because I think that I want to explore a little bit of the life of, like, an ordinary person living in the Rust District.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so residents have similar to landmarks and neighborhoods. Residents have a title, which isn't a common name known to all. They also have their pronouns, and they also kind of have it's their title, their pronouns, and their true name. And similar to landmarks and neighborhoods, their true name is this is editing. So similar to landmarks and neighborhoods, residents have a true name. However, unlike landmarks and neighborhoods, residents' true name is established through collaboration during a short vignette scene in which you and I will both participate. So we're both going to kind of build out a little bit of the life of what this person looks like in a short scene, and then we'll determine their true name from there.
Yeah. All right. So
I think that I am going to name them. I'm going to name them, Sharif Tall Blossom.
Love that.
Their pronouns are she, they pronouns. And she is a the background that I want to give is she is someone who every day gets a cinnamon raisin toast, gets a bacon, egg, and cheese on cinnamon raisin toast sandwich from the Steam Whistle Diner. Probably about an hour before lunchtime. Like they beat the lunch rush by about an hour, and that's the sandwich that they get. It's their standard order, and they are always, I get the vibe that they're always like on the move, right? Like it's always give me the usual. I've already got like exact change. I picture that they have exact change in their hand. They know exactly what it's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
If the price goes up by a quarter, it throws off their entire day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the price has literally never gone up that quarter. So they just have it like memorized to the millisecond. They know this interaction to the exact like quarter second. And they are always like timing it out to that exact second.
Can I ask something? It seems like the Steam Whistle Diner is a place that, you know, has a steadiness to it. Would you say that Sharif has gotten to the point where, you know, everybody there knows her order already? Like, she doesn't even have to say it. She just comes in at the same time, and it's a routine exchange?
For sure. Very much so. I think it is. And I think it is the kind of routine where the cooks at the diner, the woman behind the counter, like they know at like 10:50 start scrambling those eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They know at like they know to start toasting the cinnamon raisin toast at about 10:55. Mm-hmm. Like they know the timing to do it, and that way they're just literally like at this point it's a gust of wind happens, 350 is left on the counter, and the bag with the sandwich is not there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like exactly enough interaction has happened where like it is a friendly like where like the woman behind the counter is smiling because like for there was like a quick joke that was made, but like it happened so quickly you'd swear it didn't happen.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that in and of itself is the scene. I would love to maybe just complicate this a tiny bit by saying,
yeah.
Maybe if we frame this a little bit filmically, we see that interaction taking place. Is there somebody like out of town at the counter who sees that interaction and, you know, asks the woman at the counter, who's that person who just showed through? They didn't even say anything. You have a bit of a rapport or?
And I think their response is, I think her response, the woman behind the counter's response, is something to the effect of, "Oh yeah, you didn't hear? Like we chatted, we caught up, we knew, we figured out. You know, she let me know what was up. Like they gave me the inside deets." You know, they're busy, and so I get their food order. This is they're the most regular of regulars. You know, if something's new, they'll stop and tell me, but nothing's ever new with them.
Mm.
And it's this element of like this person from out of town sees this, and I think there's almost to this person from out of town a level of defensiveness, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because like this is kind of like a fun, like chill, like a fun like plays. And to have this person like blaze through there, it feels almost rude or dismissive. Like you're not stopping and acknowledging this very kind of charming diner. But the second they kind of push on it, it's oh yeah, no, fine. They're fine. They'd stop and tell me if there was something new, but there's nothing new going on with them. So they're on their way. I don't want to slow them down.
Mm-hmm. That's Sharif.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
I'm gonna propose that their true name is if something was new. And I'm gonna put it in quotation. I'm gonna propose that their true name was the quote, "If something was new, they'd stop and tell me."
Yeah, that is them.
That's them in a nutshell. Like if something was new, and I think that is that heralds true across every part of their life, that they're moving. They're always moving, and if something is new, they'll stop and tell you.
I love that. That's great.
I'm a big fan of Sharif. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. What a good character already. I've got a response to this compass then.
All right.
If we're thinking about the here and now, I mean the thing about the here and now is that you have to have somebody who's keeping track of the here and the now. So I think I'm going to introduce a landmark in the Hallowed Halls, which is one of the local newspaper, maybe.
Oh, of course, you gotta have a local newspaper.
Yeah, and I think that the name of this newspaper is the Paisley Press Gazette.
It's very good. It's very, very good, is the thing.
Mm-hmm. For its address, I think this is... It's a building that is... It's in the Hallowed Halls. It's pretty low down. I think it's you know, partially underground, their offices. But they still get a decent amount of light through the windows.
Mm.
It's the kind of space where I think as you're walking along the streets in the Hallowed Halls, there's, you know, a glass window pane and you can look into it and you can see that it's not at the same level. Like if you look in, you'll see, okay, there's a floor that is, you know, 6 feet, 10 feet, like a full story down. And the light still goes through. But it still has light is the thing. It's still, you know, a relatively bright place. And I think that the Paisley Press Gazette is, I mean, it has a little bit of, it has a history in that it's been around for a while. but it's still very much in the here and now. I think, you know, they're doing contemporary news. Like, this is a legitimate and really, you know, professional and a newspaper that has the qualities of true journalism to it. I think the one thing that sticks out from that is, you know, as this passerby, you know, whoever is walking down the street can see, you can look in at the corner of, you know, two streets in the hallowed halls. There's one corner where there's two really big open window panes that meet. And as you look down into the inner workings of the Gazette, there's just a really old printing press. I think everything about this space is contemporary except for the one thing that they use to actually print the news. Like, it's just an old printing press, and you know, there's spinning wheels and mechanisms, and the mechanics of that are kind of constantly shifting. But other than that, you know, perfectly, you know, run-of-the-mill Gazette, run-of-the-mill newspaper. Really, really straightforward otherwise.
I love that. I love that a lot. I guess my one question for you,
mm-hmm.
as we're thinking about the Paisley Press Gazette, is this the only way that I think I can ask this is using pop culture examples. What's the level of funding and like financial support that the press has? Are we thinking, is this a Daily Planet or is this a Daily Bugle?
I think it leans a little bit closer to the Bugle. It's not
okay.
It's not massive. It, you know, has a handful of consistent journalists. Like, it's the kind of place that isn't struggling, but it is. It's small, but it's not small in a way that, you know, we have to worry about downsizing or laying somebody off.
Got it. It is the quintessential small town newspaper.
Yeah. Quintessential is a really good word. I think that might be part of its true name. I think its true name is the printing press is the only thing old about it. And quintessential.
I love that. That's absolutely fantastic. I think I'm going to add a landmark as my other part of our compass. I'm going to add a landmark, and I think I'm going to add it to the Rust District.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to add our landmark to the Rust. I'm going to add the landmark to the Rust District, where I think I want it to be. Because I think what the other part of the here and now that like I want to learn about by kind of by learning about a place a little bit, and this one might be one that I throw a few more questions your way as we kind of flesh this out, is I think this is the I'm gonna call this the Grapevine Gardens. I'm gonna call this the Grapevine Gardens office collective. And I think its address is wherever there's open business space. I think that the Grapevine Gardens Office Collective is like a series of working spaces that have populated a lot of these abandoned factories and these abandoned kind of office spaces. These abandoned workspaces have been converted into like very different kinds of office spaces, which kind of like, I think captures a little bit of that like transitional nature, right? Like that these are big giant open old factories with catwalks and walkways, and you look down a level and you kind of see, and they've kind of been converted into like, individual offices have been kind of plastered over or like torn down and rebuilt, and like one factory might be like six or seven. Very small. I think there's very small, and I think they are very good. Like, small and bespoke businesses, I think, is kind of like the businesses that take up residence in the Grapevine Gardens, right? Mm. Like, it's very, it is, I don't think there are any, and this might be a question for you, I don't think, at least not in Grapevine Gardens, I don't get the vibe that there are any huge chains or big giant like legacy companies, at least not in Grapevine Gardens. And I think the question that I might have for you is like, do we picture those kind of like giant mega businesses like existing in Uproot, or does it hew much more towards a small like six person, like we're a six person catering company operation?
Yeah. I'm definitely envisioning a lot more of the latter. Mm-hmm. I could see, you know, there's a company that's a little bit larger and has like an Uproot branch, maybe. If you'll pardon the pun.
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, I don't necessarily see it as a place that is ensconced in, you know, corporate or you know, retail or, you know, even chain restaurants. I don't think that there's...
I get the same kind of vibe where it is a lot of smaller upstart, I think is a good... it's a term that I don't like in the real world, but uh-huh. In the world of Uproot, like upstart feels like a good way to describe a lot of the businesses that exist, and especially kind of exist in Grapevine Gardens, of like, it's like a group of collaborators have formed a company that like a bookbinding business, and they have their tiny like two room office space, and it's like adjacent to a bagel shop and adjacent to a really nice tapas restaurant.
Yeah. I think the thing that I'm really, really gravitating toward here is, you know, this is still business, but it's not corporate in that way. Like, yeah. You said bookbinding, and I was like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's not upstart in the way that, like, a Silicon Valley, you know, four people around a set of computers is
right.
Upstart.
Yeah.
I really like the image of, you know, Uproot is a place where people work with their hands.
And I think that kind of points me towards a true name that I like, an experiential true name that I really love, which is, it's a specific experience that, like, I'm just going to kind of write it out. It is window shopping inside a giant concrete environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this idea that, like, I absolutely adore, of like, these are small bespoke businesses that are kind of offering like crafts and tiny services and like, you know, artisan food. And I picture there being a lot of that kind of it being a thing where, like, these factories that get converted, it's very much the opposite of what you might see in, like, a city in sort of our world of, like, you know, you have the nameplates and you have, and, like, a security guard's like, which nameplate are you going to? This is, like, you go into this giant factory, like, industrial warehouse, mm-hmm. and there's, like, 15... tiny offices, and on their windows they kind of advertise a little bit of what they do, and you kind of, I think that it's almost evocative of a craft fair is the vibe I get walking among the Grapevine Gardens. Is like, you walk through and like you stroll and you go, I'm looking for a, you know, it's I'm looking for a gift to let me hit Grapevine Gardens and stroll a few storefronts and find what I'm looking for.
It's Artist Alley.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Yes, that is exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't necessarily know, like, it's a collective. They move around. Like, you might end up with a bar of soap. You might end up with a really nice basket. which wares and which businesses are around might rotate and might change, but you can always guarantee that there's going to be something. Oh, that's cool as hell. I love that.
That's super good. I love that. I adore it.
Well, to close off this compass, I just want to double check on time. I know that the Zencaster says we're at 1 hour and 7 minutes.
Yeah, that's about what I've got as well.
Okay. You said we're shooting for 1.5 hours?
Somewhere in around 90 minutes, yeah.
Cool. So I reckon that with this last one and with the event that we probably won't have time to get to a second compass. So I'm just thinking about what we want to get to from that end.
We could do a second shorter. If we could do an event
and then
wait, how many?
Yeah,
like maybe a second shorter round of like one an event.
Yeah. I think that seems reasonable. Yeah. I don't want to overstretch on your time, but I also don't have anything going on, so.
I'm loving this. I appreciate that consideration, and I think that if we do I think we have to, is that four or is that, did we do four or did we do three?
We did four. I mean, the other thing is I would be happy to kind of close out with this, with an event and then do three for the next round so that it's 3 and 3.
I'm cool with that. Yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. Yeah. In that case, we can play it a little bit fast and loose with the rules here. What would you like to do for our event to close out this compass of the here and now?
I'm thinking, let me read a little bit about events to kind of get an idea, because I have a thought and I might want to like push on it a little bit. So I'm going to create an event that changes and alters the city in some way. It should be related to the compass that we set up at the beginning of the round or to a card that was played in that round. It's a good way to tie up loose ends. It is connected to a neighborhood landmark or resident. I think that the event that I want to lay down is is tying into that sense of I think the event that I want to lay down tying into an element of the here and now that I think is interesting, and like we've set up some really interesting pieces of the here and now, and the event that I want to tie is to the Paisley Press Gazette. I want to set up, and I'm trying to think of how I want to set it up to be, it's the mayoral, it's just called like the mayoral meeting scandal.
Ooh.
And I think it is an event, you know, it is tied to, it's actually, I'm going to pluralize that and say it's the mayoral meetings scandal. It is tied to the idea is that it is the Gazette has broken a report about a series of backroom meetings that like the mayor has, this has been like a tradition that has gone back that has just kind of been exposed, of various sort of very high level and kind of like things like price fixing, right? Like things of like mayors getting into the pocket of businesses and doing these things, and it just being this like long running tradition. And because the thing that interests me is this idea of like this here and now, this life that kind of lives in these shadows. What happens when an element of that history kind of crashes into it?
Mm.
And that is what really interests me. So the idea that the Gazette has uncovered this evidence of this long running thing that has like ingrained itself within the history of the city that like we weren't even necessarily aware of as residents of the city.
Yeah.
Is very interesting to me.
That's fascinating. And I mean, talk about gritty. If we're thinking about the adjectives like that, that juxtaposition is really exciting.
And it's that really nice juxtaposition of like, we've created like a really bright and engaging and like positive, like all of our places are that. And so this element of like this really kind of dark subtext to it has just sort of been blown open, like, is what I'm here for.
Yeah, no, I love that. So we've got the event, and now we get to respond to it by taking on voices of the city. We're going to go around, and rather than kind of responding to this as specific residents, we're just going to, you know, take on the myriad perspectives and viewpoints of the community, especially those who might be impacted by the event. And each of us can either ask a question about the, you know, the origins, implications of the event, state an opinion that some people in the community might hold toward it, or show a consequence in a sentence or two of people in the city reacting. And I think I'm going to start by showing a consequence. And I think the consequence I want to pitch is, I think, I mean, you mentioned price fixing as a sort of scandal. I think that Grapevine Gardens Small Business Collective, I don't think they were impacted, but I think they go on strike in solidarity for the people who were.
I like that. I like that. I'm going to state an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, it is held by, I think it is held by elder members of the community. Something that, like, our kind of landmarks and people and residents, like, our landmarks and residents haven't really heard a lot from. And I think that an opinion of that is, like, yeah, a lot of these factories maybe could have stayed pumping. Like, a lot of these factories have shut down, and who is to say that, you know, if these meetings had not happened, right? If, you know, there's, like, if some of these meetings had not happened, maybe some of these old factories that, you know, gave a lot to the community at a certain point might still be here. And I think that there's that opinion is held among people that used to kind of work at those factories.
Yeah. Oh no, this just made me sad.
I got sad. Well, I think that, like, the nice part about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the fantasy that we can put in Uproot.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, tying to the event is, like, that they blew this open, and, like, we can kind of just authorially state, like, consequences are enforced on this, right? Like,
yeah.
That, like, harm was caused, but, like, you know, the press blowing this open has sort of forced the hand of people to kind of own this in a way that I think is, in a way that I need that to play out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we started the event, we can wrap it up, and you do have the final say on the event. How do we kind of, we started with this opening, do you want to give us a shot of seeing those consequences kind of unfold or seeing that in action?
Yeah, absolutely, because I know the exact vignette that I want to play out a little bit, the closing visual. What happens is we're at the Steam Whistle Diner,
mm-hmm.
and our out-of-town friend is, like, trying something entirely different. One of those dishes that nobody that is a local would try.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, they're getting, like, the fruit smoothie or something. Something that you just know you're not going to get from the Steam Whistle Diner.
Mm-hmm.
And they see Sharif come in, and they see her, like... And they kind of, like, for the first time, they kind of just, like, give her the customary nod. But for the first time, they see her stop at the counter. And, like, she's got, like, a humongous, like, legal pad in her hand just covered in stuff.
Yeah.
And her shoulders just sag. And she's like, oh, we gotta talk. I have got some news for you. And the woman behind the counter, like... The entire diner stops, right? Like, when they say, like, I've got news for you, the entire diner stops and everyone looks up and they just start, like, breaking things down and, like, flipping papers, and we just close out on them, like, rattling off all of these things that are happening. The idea that of, like, this has forced so many things into motion between the office strike and the newspaper breaking it open and the political unrest that all of that has caused, like, so much stuff is happening that Sharif is like, just is telling stories.
Yeah. Oh, what a good image. I love closing out that compass. I mean, that truly is the here and the now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. That's good as hell.
Do we want to go for another compass, or do we want to leave it there?
Either
one is perfectly good with me.
I'd love to, you know, just see a little bit more of this city. We feel like we've set such a good foundation here.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and I'll keep this one a little bit open-ended and say I'm interested in wildlife and nature. Sorry, I was typing while I said that.
Of course.
I'm interested in wildlife and nature.
Okay.
And I'm going to give us a neighborhood, just because we've done a lot with the Rust District and the Hallowed Halls. I'd love it to do just a little bit more of a neighborhood. And I think this is, it's a neighborhood that is not necessarily on the outskirts of town, but it's like there's a part of the town that is a mixture of residential, and it has like a natural quality to it. Like you turn down a street and there's a row of houses, and then you turn, you know, the next street over, and it's like, oh, this one doesn't have houses. This is, you know, a set of trees. And then you keep following that one and you turn, and it's like, okay, there is no road. Now it's just a dirt trail. And I think that there is a little bit of, yeah, that kind of, you know, foresty quality to it, in the sense that there's nature that has always been here and kind of coexists with it. And I guess that's its sort of reputation. And for the neighborhood, I'm gonna say its title is, maybe it's Oak Flats.
Oak Flats is very good. I like Oak Flats. Oak Flats is a good name.
And I think for its true name, I don't know if any of the trees there actually are oaks. I think maybe it's almost kind of funnier if somebody named it Oak Flats, and then afterwards realized, you know, an arborist looked at it and was like, none of these trees are oaks.
Can I share with you a true, as you flesh that out, can I share with you a true Philadelphia story?
Please.
So as in an effort to like green our neighborhood, they probably like 100 or so years ago, they planted a bunch of trees. They were like, we ordered a bunch of trees. We shipped a bunch of trees into the neighborhood. Like, we're planting them. We're doing a huge initiative to like add greenery to our neighborhood. And it worked, and like there are trees like all over our neighborhood in West Philly. However, what they did not realize about these trees was that they are, I don't know the proper name of them, but I know that the commonly accepted name is shit berries.
Yeah.
Because their berries smell like defecation, and they did not realize that when they planted a bunch of baby trees. It took them, you know, 80 years until the trees were fully grown and producing berries then dropping onto the floor.
Oh no!
So that is what that vibe gives me of, like, none of these trees are oak, and that is the vibe that element gives me of like. Of like, we planted all of these beautiful trees. Oak Flats is this lovely oak tree district. And it's like, well, it's been two generations and those aren't oak trees. Those are pine trees.
Yeah, I will. In that case, I think I do need to qualify the true name of Oak Flats. None of these trees are oaks, but they sure do smell nice.
I like that. I do like that. Yes. I felt like you would appreciate that true neighborhood story, the true street magic.
That just radiates small town charm.
So I want to add, I would love to add That story partially, like, I want to add a landmark, and I think I want to add it to the Rust District.
Hmm.
Along a very similar line. Or maybe I want to add it to Oak Flats. I'm trying to think. I'm going to add it to Oak Flats, and I'm going to add it to be, I'm going to make it actually the, you know what I would like Oak Flats to have? And I'm just going to add this. I would like Oak Flats to have the Oak Flats Boardwalk.
Oh, I love that. Tell me about the Oak Flats Boardwalk, please.
It's along the river on the outskirts of town, and it is like they built Oak Flats, right? They built out this beautiful thing, and almost like they planted all of these trees along Oak Flats. They created this whole space, and as part of doing that, they built a boardwalk, right? Like they planted the trees along this river.
Mm-hmm.
So that boats that were going by would see this beautiful, lush kind of garden scene. But real life doesn't, like, map out to sort of the painterly goal of this, of the city planners that kind of engineered Oak Flats.
Yeah, you've got the painting, so, and then you see the kind of end result.
Yeah, like, we see this beautiful paint, and it's this beautiful nature scene, but, like, the reality is, like, so many people started coming to Oak Flats. It became such a popular spot among locals, among out-of-towners, that, like, a boardwalk pops up. And it is a very kind of boardwalk-y boardwalk. There are games, there are street food. It is, like, a very kind of space that, like, I think, you know, there are the city of the Chamber of Commerce types, like the people of the Hallowed Halls, or like the big wigs in the Hallowed Halls, might bristle at the existence of the boardwalk. It's, I don't get the vibe that it's something that they were like excited for, but I think it is the truest expression of like, this is a space that has grown and this is what we have built on it, right? Like it is, its true name is Fun and Games Atop a Picturesque Portrait of Nature, in that, like, people kept coming, and people set up, you know, stands and food stands and all these things, and it became this very kind of lively space that I think is not necessarily, I don't want to say it's not, like, welcome, because I think, like, you know, it is what it is, but I think it is not officially kind of ordained, right? Like, it was never part of the plan to have this kind of hopping, swinging boardwalk, and yet here it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you were to see kind of a beautiful, like, oil painting now, like, it would be dappled with these little tiny drops of acrylic paint, which are all these lights and, you know, carnival barkers and all these things that, like, dot this space that was supposed to be kind of lush and almost, I guess, conservationist, but has turned into this, and it creates a very different sort of picture, but it's a beautiful picture nonetheless.
Yeah, I get an image of the, you know, the melancholy of going to the boardwalk on the last day of summer, except it's always the last day of summer, because, you know, we're kind of perpetually in this autumnal energy.
Yeah, I love that. I love that a whole lot.
What a great landmark. I've got a resident.
Okay.
And I think this resident is well known. I think that she lives in the Providence Clock Tower Garden. And I do specify that she lives in the Providence Clock Tower Garden because I think this resident, this resident is Big Whiskey the Goose.
Here's the thing about playing this game on the Google Doc is that I can watch these things slowly fill in the Google Doc, and I have to contain my joy until you say them out loud. Please tell me about Big Whiskey. I've never wanted to know more about anyone that I want to know about Big Whiskey the Goose.
Big Whiskey the Goose is a massive goose. You know, a Canadian goose, like, I would say you know, average. They typically average what, a couple feet tall, like 2 feet. I don't know how tall a goose. Like, yeah, like 2 feet tall. Big Whiskey is significantly larger than that. Big Whiskey is, I mean, she earned her name because she is, I want to say 3.5-4 feet tall. Massive wingspan. I think she has, there is a particular spot in the Province Clock Tower Garden that, at some point, the gardeners, the landscapers, set up an arrangement of flowers, and they were, you know, halfway through, as the garden was being constructed, they had to leave it overnight, and they came back in the morning, and Big Whiskey the Goose was sitting there, and they have not been able to take that nest, that place away from her. I think that there's a particular spot that is hers. And you know, as long as people live and let live, she's fine. She's not liable to attack anybody or do the things that gooses are want to do. As long as nobody, you know, and she's very much a, you stay in your space and I will stay in my space. And as long as we don't have to have any problems here. But I think the thing that is true about Big Whiskey is that everybody in town, or anybody who's spent time in the garden, has a story or a rumor or a legend or some personal experience, some opinion of Big Whiskey the Goose. And I would love to maybe just like rapid fire a couple of rumors or some hearsay about her.
Big Whiskey, if you ask the people behind the counter at the Steam Whistle Diner, they swear Big Whiskey has a regular order. No one has ever seen her leave the Clock Tower Garden, but like you ask for a Big Whiskey, like they know the sandwich that you're asking for.
I think that I mean, did you hear that after the mayoral meeting scandal, the mayor like was I think this was like 2 weeks after was seen just wandering the garden in melancholy and despair, and Big Whiskey chased him off? That's what I heard, at least.
I heard that. I did hear that. I heard specifically, I heard that, like, so I have a friend, my friend's cousin swears that this is true, that like if you go to the garden after they close it at the end of the night, you'll just see Big Whiskey like cleaning up. She might run the garden. We're not actually sure.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because did you hear that? I mean, I heard that the reason that she won her name was because somebody, you know, as a prank, brought some whiskey to the garden and challenged her to a drinking contest. And I heard that was how she earned her name. She drinks everybody under the table, and that is actually the reason that alcohol is banned in the Clock Tower Garden. That's what I heard.
See, I heard it's just because she's so particular about alcohol. Like, if you bring the wrong beverage, she will like peck it out of your hands. Like, if you make a drink wrong, like if you put too much grenadine in a Manhattan, she will just like peck your hand until you drop the glass and spill it. She'll make you start it over. Just a real snob.
Is that why there's all those glass shards around her nest? Is that what?
That might be. That might be why there's all those glass shards.
I mean, I keep feeling like, you know, somebody needs to do something about those glass shards. But I don't know. Maybe you said that if she's the one who's running the garden, maybe she's keeping those shards around for a reason.
That might be what she's doing there.
And I think, I mean, I feel like that tells me everything that we need to know about Big Whiskey. For true name, I'm going to say tall names for a taller goose.
I love it. I adore it. I adore it so much.
Tall tales, yeah. Tall tales for a taller goose. And I guess that we have an event here. Just to close us out.
What's the event?
I think that the event is, I mean, I just sort of keep coming back to the Oak Flats Boardwalk. And I mean, we know that Uproot is sort of perpetually in this constant autumn. But I think even despite, you know, the autumnal quality, you know, it still has a turn of the seasons. And that does mean that it still has a harvest season. And I think that at the, you know, when it's time to celebrate, like, true autumn, the time of year when it's really time for harvest, and for the people who garden to kind of gather in that way, there's a festival that's held along the Oak Flats Boardwalk, and I think it's, yeah, the Boardwalk Harvest Festival, and I think it takes place it's a week long thing. It's a week long event, but it takes place, it doesn't take place during the day. It takes place, at sunset each day, and it runs, just a couple hours into the evening. And it's a whole family affair. Like, it's an event that, you know, starts, every day has different proceedings, but, it's the kind of thing that, you know, if you miss one day, there's always going to be something the next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's generally just a good time.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you wanna take on a voice of the city here?
I would love to, because I have a very specific consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that there is absolutely a harvest parade.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't always a harvest parade.
Can I pitch you on something? I don't want to overstep.
Yes.
Is it a are there floats that go along the river, or is it on the street?
It is on the river, and it is on the river to commemorate a recent, like, a thing that happened a few years ago. Like, this is a much in the spirit of the boardwalk. This is a very impromptu thing because a few years ago, like, after the boardwalk festival kind of, it became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened a few years ago that was, like, a hugely magical thing that now there is, like, a tiny parade that honors this tiny event that is related to the Harvest Festival.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Whiskey River Parade.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, Big Whiskey floated down that river by when the festival was happening, didn't interact with anybody, didn't do anything, just floated down that river, and now there is a small parade that traditionally she will be at the front of, and, like, this parade will kind of come behind her as they just float down the river.
Oh, that's wonderful. Absolutely delightful.
So it's the Whiskey River Parade is a new but treasured part of the Oak Flats Harvest Festival.
Yeah. And I think there's I'm just thinking through Voices of the City here. I think this is one of the few aspects of Oak Flats Boardwalk that I mean, we've established that there's a bit of, you know, the knobs in the Hollowed Halls sort of turn their nose up at this space a little bit. But I think that this is, you know, even though it is at times even more bustling than usual, this is one of those events where they're willing to kind of put aside some of their begrudging nature and truly, truly appreciate it. I mean,
I adore it.
There might be a little bit of a quality of, like, okay, it's drawing in a lot of commerce, like, even from out of town. Like, there are people who come in from out of Uproot to come and attend. And there might be some, you know, implications for why people are willing to put aside their frustration. But I think that it is, for whatever reason it is, whether their intentions are pure or a little bit motivated by its financial success. I think that this is one of those things that some of the people in the Hallowed Halls are able to look at and appreciate a little bit.
I love it. I adore it so much. I'm absolutely giddy. I feel like that might be game.
I think that might be game.
And I'm so giddy because this was so fun.
And I think that's Uproot, which is, I mean, certainly.
I think that is the city of Uproot.
It's crisp, it's bright, it's gritty. What more could you ask for?
What more could you ask for? This was everything that I wanted it to be and then some.
I'm so glad to hear that. Jeff, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming on the show and playing this game. This was so absolutely delightful.
Mm-hmm. Truly.
Well, real quick, before we wrap up, where can people find you and your work online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at CExcursion, spelled S-E-A Excursion. You can support my work at itch.io or on Patreon, also at CExcursion.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing the show. This was such a blast. And for now, I'm going to throw it over to me in the future so that he can wrap up with the show. Take a future me.
Thanks, Bass Me. And thanks again to Caro for coming on the show. That game was, like, I'm not kidding when I say this is one of my favorite games. And, like, playing that with you just now was, like, such a reason why. It is, like, I adore this game so much, and I'm so grateful that we got to play it together. Like I said, you can pick up your own copy of I'm Sorry, Did You Say Street Magic? Currently on sale from March 10th until March 13th. That is 25% off at cexcursion.itch.io/streetmagic. Be sure to pick up your own copy. And be sure to check out all the other things Caro was working on. They actually just released a really amazing-looking bundle of Beam Saber playbooks with Ben Roswell, who is another one of my favorite game designers. So I'm, like, fucking super hyped for it. Yeah, go check out all their stuff. Go follow them on Twitter at CExcursion. And then while you're on Twitter, follow us at Party of One Pod. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/Party of One Podcast. Head to our Discord at bit.ly/Party of One Discord. Head to our merch store at bit.ly/Party of One Merch. And if you enjoyed the show, leave us a nice iTunes review or a Podchaser review. Leave us some love on social media. Tell a friend about the show. All of these things help people find the show and helps us do bigger, better, and cooler things. You can also support the show financially at patreon.com/JeffStormer or ko-fi.com/JeffStormer. Or, I think that's all the thing. No, you can support the other podcast that I produce every week, All My Fantasy Children, a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast on the One Shot Podcast Network, powered by you. Every week, my best friend Eric Catano Size and I take a listener-submitted prompt. We spin it into an original fantasy character, and we populate a shared universe called fantasy one story at a time. New episodes drop every Friday-ish at oneshotpodcast.com. Party of One is produced and edited, as always, by Jeff Stormer and Jen Frank. All music for the show comes from the song Infinite Lives by Megaran featuring the D&D Sluggers. And the Party of One logo is by Evan Rowland. If you'd like to inquire about advertising rates, press coverage of the show, or about coming on the show as a guest, shoot me an email at partyofonepodcast@gmail.com. And I think that's it. I think that's all we do here. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Remember to fight the forces of fascism every single day. Remember that self-love and self-care are radical and defiant acts of resistance. And as always, party on, everybody.
If you're hearing this, that means you have listened to every last second of this episode, and that probably makes you a fan of this show. Well, if you're a fan and you like what we're doing and want to help others find it as well, then consider leaving us a 5-star review over on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. Getting more ratings really does help more people find the show, and reading your nice words about the things that we put out into the world makes us feel all warm and good inside, and we want more of those good, good feels. So head on over to your podcast player of choice and leave us a 5-star review. Thanks.